to Jackson for 6. Wake up with Sean and Mark. The Morning Drive with Walsh and Jackson. Mile High Sports.
Okay, it's hour number 2. Morning Drive, Walsh and Jackson here on Mile High Sports Radio. Kyle Berry's back behind the glass. The cleanest team, according to that USA Today list, the team with the fewest amount of arrests over the last 5 years, is
the Houston Texans.
Only 12.
The Texans.
Only 12 arrests.
Is that good or bad?
That's good. I mean, you made a great point. You made a great point last segment. This happens everywhere. This is not just a National Football League thing. This happens everywhere in every single business. Just us.
Yeah. And once again, it doesn't we don't support it. We just recognize it and report it. And just like with anybody, with any issues they have. So a lot of the ones that there was 972 incidents on that list. And like I said, some guys were multiple offenders, but a lot of them were alcohol related. And if I had the time, or if I had a crackpot statistics crew, I probably would have had them look up what's the ratio of, you know, there's how many people are in America?
I don't know.
Come on, man. 327 million, somewhere around there. So let's just call it 300 million.
Okay.
Of 300 million Americans, how many have had an arrest?
It's a good question. Probably.
Have you ever
20%.
Been arrested?
I'm not going to say that on air. No.
I have been.
Yes, I've been arrested.
Yeah.
Man, bring on your former teammate.
He just looks so guilty when I said that. It's okay, man. I think you're probably a part of the norm. Everybody's been arrested or you're not living. Oh, boy. We're talking about arrest. Speaking of arrested development, how... It's Boogie Bell. What's up, KB?
What's going on, MJ?
Oh, man, we got a wacky show going on this Tuesday, man. Bring some sanity to the show, please.
Yeah, I think I better jump off. You're talking about a rep.
Ken Bell, number 35 in your playbook, number 1 in your heart. Boston College, you was part of that, the helmet. What was it called? What's the name of the Flutie pass, that whole play?
What was it? The Hail Mary.
The Hail Mary.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Do you still get people ask you about that, talk about that?
Oh, yeah, all the time. And, you know, the funny part I always mention, and because when you see the 30, I believe it's a 30 for 30 on NFL Network, you'll see me catching a pass from Flutie. But I had a good game that game.
In that drive? Yeah.
Yeah, I had a really good game. I actually started that game and played well. But, you know, there was so much scoring in there, no one remembers any of that stuff.
they only
remember the pass.
The pass. Wow. So now, fast forward, man, I hate to say this, but fast forward almost 40 years, huh?
Yeah, isn't that something?
That's amazing, man. We're getting old. So my rookie year in the NFL, my roommate, Kenny Bell, my roomie on the road. So when we were in Cleveland, sitting there watching the news and they were handing out dog biscuits, no one would have ever – did you ever expect him to actually have those dog biscuits at the stadium for the AFC Championship game?
Who would ever think that people would want to throw dog bones at us? But they did.
And it was cold. It made matters worse.
Who would ever thunk it? So then that was in 1986. Then, you had something going on in your loins, and you had this little baby boy. He's your namesake, Ken Bell. He went on to play. Did he play at Fairview?
He played at Fairview High School. Yep,
yeah,
for
I remember going to.
Son. Yep.
I was there at the quarterfinal game his senior year versus Pomona, where I knew he threw up. He was hurt the game, first of all. He was hurt, still played. I think he threw for a touchdown, ran for a touchdown, and caught a touchdown. He was just like slash on that Fairview team.
He was able to do a little bit of everything. Yeah, that's right. That was the year he came back from a broken collarbone where he had a
that's
plate
what it was.
Put in. And he came back after like 7 games. And his very first game back against Fort Collins, he ends up getting a pick 6.
Wow. Wow. Just an incredible athlete. Went on to Nebraska. I think he owns – does he own all the receiving records at Nebraska?
They were just broken, MJ, by Stanley Morgan this past
season. Wow. Wow.
Yep, just broken. So he had him for about 4 years. But
hey, still, hey, it's a hell of a run.
It is. Yeah.
Got drafted by Tampa Bay, if I remember. I know he played a little while with the Ravens. And correct. Where else did he stay before he came here to Denver?
That was it. He was drafted in the fifth round okay. by the Bucks, and then just that plaguing hamstring that plagued him in high school through college caught up to him in a big way over the last 4 years.
Yeah, yeah.
He's now with Salt Lake of the AAFL, correct?
He is now with the Salt Lake Stallions of the AAF. Yeah, he's finally getting a chance to, you know, stay healthy for one, and get a chance to live out his dream, and get that opportunity to get on some film.
Ken, what'd you think of the opening weekend of the AAFL?
So, you know, a lot of people have been asking me about, you know, my take on it, and I thought the quality of football is there. I think that, and MJ, you guys can all attest to this, the defenses are always going to be ahead of the offenses early on.
Yes.
And with virtually no, very little time to prepare, offenses are behind. The other thing I think that in watching, I watched a little bit of all the games. The thing that I really think is going to hurt, and they may want to look at this, is the 35-second play clock. You know, play clock. Offenses don't have a chance to when I was watching, they were barely getting a chance to get a playoff, let alone analyze the defense real quick and be able to check out of it into a better play. So I think that's where they may have some opportunities. But again, once the offenses get caught up a little bit, I think that'll be a much more competitive product on the field.
That was one of the consistent critiques about the first year or first game, first week of the AAF. It was just a stark contrast between the offensive line and the defensive line. In that league, they only allow 5 rushers, though. So that's pretty unique.
That is pretty unique. But, you know, I really like their approach. Charlie Ebersole, one of the co-founders of the league, and his approach to it is player safety.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's really what it's all about. You know, you and I played it and been through the rigors of trying to recover after a game, and it's not easy. It's, you know, you feel like you've been beat from head to toe for the first couple of days after a game, and, you know, all the things that we have to do to just get ourselves ready for the next week, it takes a lot out of you.
I'm talking to former Broncos running back Ken Bell joining us, and there's no kicking, obviously, in the new league. You were a returner in your career. How important are kickoffs?
You know, I thought that they were a fun part aspect of the game. And, you know, I'm a little bit partial to it, having been primarily a kick returner, special teams player for my career. And I had a lot of fun doing it. So maybe I'm a little crazy. Probably one too many
you
hits.
You are crazy.
One too many hits, for sure. But, I, again, looking at player from a player safety standpoint, putting the ball at the 25, I think that's the right thing to do.
I am watching the league, excited, of course, to see Kenny playing. And I think it was they interviewed him. He's kind of a face of the league because it just, I mean, he's a media guy. He's a media darling. If you just light up when you meet him. So he's just that guy. I don't know where he got that personality from, but
how is you?
Did you talk to him after the game, or have you talked to him since his first game?
No, I haven't talked to him yet. We're going to chat today. But we exchanged texts and everything. I'm excited for him. I think that, you know, the quarterback play still needs a little bit to be desired for the Stallions. It looks like Woodrum, their starter, is going to be out this week. And Scott Linehan, offensive coordinator of the Cowboys, his son is going to get an opportunity to start this weekend. So, I'm sure they're going to have to make some adjustments to get him acclimated and get him ready to play this weekend.
Right.
Hey, Ken, what's your opinion of the current state of the Denver Broncos, and what do you think they need to focus on this offseason?
You know, I like the direction in terms of coaching so far, the coaching staff. I think that, you know, they're going to have some guys in there that are a little more innovative and be able to get guys in the right positions to make plays. So, you know, from the coaching standpoint, I think they're on the right track. You know, honestly, I'm on the fence on what their priority should be going into the draft and for free agency. I know that, you know, obviously that front, whether it's the offensive line, for sure the offensive lineman, you know, may need to look at what we can do to enhance that team, that group. And always, you know, you can always look at the quarterback position and see what the, you know, is out there. There. At the end of the day, I really think that, you know, and it sounds kind of cliche, you want to go after the best player available.
Mm. They did that last year with Bradley Chubb, and I guess you can always second guess a draft, and you can't argue with a rookie, an all-pro rookie, basically, all-rookie team. Just about broke the sack record, but just I think even exceeded people's expectations with Bradley Chubb. But Quentin Nelson also did. He was a Pro Bowler. And
he transformed that Colts offensive line.
He absolutely.
That line was good.
A lot of people have given him credit for transforming the offensive line of the Colts, which in a year where, Andrew Luck was coming back from an injury and there was lots of question marks around him, they kept him upright. And heck, Mahomes threw 50 touchdowns. I think Andrew Luck threw 39. He was second in the NFL. And a lot of it he attributes to that offensive line.
No question about it. I mean, Luck was able to come back. And like you said, he was able to stay upright, had great protection, had a great running game, all as a result of that offensive line play. So, you know, we're getting a guy that I think obviously has that experience and can put hopefully be able to put those guys in the right position to make plays.
If you're in Kyler Murray's position and you had to choose football or baseball, would you make the same decision that he made, going all in on trying to be a quarterback?
You know, I'm a football guy. I played baseball growing up, pretty good baseball player, but I just had that connection with football, and I sensed that that's where Kyler's heart just kind of led him to. And you know, you can't blame a guy for following his dream. If that's his dream to play at the next level in football, then man, I'm 110% behind him.
Sean's a huge Kyler Murray fan, so I'm not on that bus yet, so I've been doing a little more research. And he's the first guy to be a first-round draft choice in the MLB and a first-round draft choice potentially, quote-unquote, air quotes.
He will be a first-round guy.
In the NFL. So just a super athlete. I think when I think of football players that have played both sports, Michael Jordan and, of course, Bo Jackson. What other baseball players?
Deion Sanders.
Deion Sanders, yeah.
Tim Tebow.
Timmy Tebow.
He'll be
in the, he might make the league this year.
He'll be called up this year.
He might make it to the majors. Yeah, it's interesting to see Kyler Murray and what could possibly happen with him. I don't know. The jury's out.
Should Denver go after Kyler Murray, in your opinion?
I think that they should not overlook him. I think he can contribute quite a bit to our organization and this franchise and the community. And I tell you what, man, he seems like just a great guy on and off the field. And that's the kind of person you want, you know, in your locker room and representing could potentially be the face of your franchise.
I heard Kirk Herbstreit talk about Kyler Murray, and of course he covers NCAA football, and he says that his stock is only going to increase because in a personal interview, the guy is just really tight and will absolutely blow, in his opinion, will absolutely blow GMs and coaches away. So not only does he have the athletic skill, but he also has the acumen of, you know, of a football quarterback, NFL football quarterback. So,
for sure. You know, and guys, you know, for him to take that leap of faith and just put himself out there and say, you know what, I'm going to participate in the NFL Combine, it also says a lot too.
Which, yeah, a lot of quarterbacks are ducking the combine because they don't want to show their skills and they want to rest on what they have as a perceived value, which Kyler Murray, I don't know if he can do anything wrong. I don't think it would hurt him very much, if at all, if he didn't report, except for the fact that GMs, the older GMs, probably aren't as crazy as the younger GMs are. But aside from the fact that, you know, there was a big question mark of whether he would go to the go play baseball or if he wanted to play football. So,
right.
Is the pro day now more important than the combine?
You know, I think that the pro days are heavily looked at. I'm not sure, you know, obviously you're trying to get in the minds of these GMs and scouts and coaches and where they feel like is the priority. But, you know, I think they're both equally as important. But I think that for Kyler to take that leap of faith and he wants to participate and show teams what he can do, I think that says a lot right there.
Kenny Bell, man, I love you, brother. What do you got going on today?
Well, actually, I am off today. I was a little under the weather and just trying to recoup here, and I think I got too excited over Kenny's game this weekend. So I'm going to say
2 day lag.
Exactly. So
I've been to a couple of Kenny Bell's parties. They're real parties.
Good to know.
And I have pictures.
Oh boy, I gotta go.
Thanks, Ken. We appreciate it, man. Feel better.
Love talking to you, man. Take care.
Thank you, man.
All right. Ken Bell, former Broncos running back.
Love that guy. He's hilarious, man. We used to watch Saturday Night Live.
You show me these pictures?
Before every home game. I doubt if I have them in my phone, but I'll look them up on my computer.
All right, 303-831-1340. We'll be back on the other side. Morning Drive, Walston Jackson. Many days fall away.
Mark Jackson, The Morning Drive on Mile High Sports.
Disappointment. Wilson Pickett. Now, who's this? But is it really?
Jackie Wilson.
Close.
I don't know if that deserves the ringing of the bell.
Close enough.
So Kyler Murray just signed on with the same agent as Cardinals head coach Cliff Kingsbury.
Oh, really?
So Kyle Berry's theory is becoming a little more reality that he may get picked number one overall by the Cardinals. Same agent. It's like a LeBron James, Rich Paul, Anthony Davis situation.
And the plot thickens.
I have a dream that one day that Kyle Murray will be a Denver Bronco. Kyler Murray. I love it. I'm all in on this guy. Herb Street was, you brought that up when we're talking to Ken Bell. He was absolutely dead on accurate. This guy is a pocket passer, and when things break down, and you know with that Denver Broncos offensive line, things will break down.
That
Garrett Bowles, left tackle.
That's one of the positives. So Kyle,
he can get out of trouble, and the guy can throw on the run, too. So what? He's 5'9". Who cares? The game is changing. The game of football is changing. It's not about the prototypical quarterback anymore.
How much money does he have to give back? I think he has to give back like $1.2 million.
Yeah. I think when it's all said and done, he just got over a little bit over $1 million from that baseball contract. But again, we brought this up earlier in the show. Can he pull an Elway? Like if a team that he doesn't want to go to drafts him, he can pull the baseball card. Say, I'm going to go play baseball for the Oakland A's. Who are some of the teams? The Raiders could draft him.
Yeah, so
the Jags could draft him. The Giants, the Broncos, those are the Dolphins. So there's about a handful of teams that pick in the top 15 that can draft Kyler Murray. Would you say no to any of those?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Skins too.
Which one of those teams would you say no to? The Cardinals?
Maybe the Redskins.
No, because you got, you know.
You got Cliff.
A coach that really wants you, a new coach. That would be exciting. I'm not excited about the Cardinals at all. I think they...
Cardinals just,
are the worst team in the NFL next year.
I don't know how they were playing for an NFC championship 4 years ago and they're this bad.
But Gruden, I mean, so this is Mike Mayock's first year as the general manager.
His first year as being a general manager anywhere.
So
I you move on for Derek Carr.
What did he come out with his
mock draft?
Mock draft.
I don't think he's doing that this year.
He's right on with the Broncos, man. Did you see his mock draft for the
Broncos? No, I don't watch NFL Network.
Oh, man. I read this somewhere. There was a mock draft with Mike Mayock for 5 years.
Oh, you brought that up on the show.
I think it's the 6 years that John Elway's been the GM, actually.
Yeah, and his picks would have been better than Elway's. Much better.
Yeah.
Man,
it's hard to tell this early in the game, but more Pro Bowl appearances by his picks. And they were linemen. They were offensive linemen.
Ryan Ramczyk.
Ramczyk and Quentin Nelson. No. Did he take Quentin Nelson over Chubb?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think he took Quentin Nelson over Chubb. Because obviously if you're doing a mock draft.
That's what I was rooting for.
He didn't expect Chubb to be there.
That's what I was rooting for. I was rooting for Denver to draft Quentin Nelson. I like two players a lot in that draft. I mean, I like Bradley Chubb, obviously. But I didn't think that was a priority for Denver. I was preaching. I like Josh Allen a lot. I obviously like Baker Mayfield a lot, and I like Quentin Nelson a lot.
The Patriots. How about the Patriots moving up to get Kyler Murray?
I don't know if that would – I don't know. It doesn't seem like he would be the heir apparent to Tom Brady. It seems like
Are
seems
you
like
kidding
me? It seems like the Patriots run a different system for...
Come on, Sean. Listen. How long have you been watching the
how
Patriots?
How about the Duke kid for
how long
New
been,
England?
How long have you been watching the Patriots?
My what's since the, 1986 when the, you guys beat him in the playoffs?
What's the forte of the New England Patriots? Bill Belichick, New England Patriots.
What's the forte?
Yeah, what's the strength?
What's the strength?
Yeah.
Coaching is obviously a strength.
Actually, yeah, I think actually
he Sean out-coaches McVay, everybody.
Sean McVay actually says that. He goes, how do you guys recreate yourself? New England recreates itself. When it comes playoff time, if they're a team that, and obviously, I don't know if the Rams must have scouted that Tom Brady was throwing a lot of balls in the middle of the field, but they were crushing them on just little out routes.
That's how they crush everybody.
Edelman, no.
They always throw that's those dink and dunk passes.
That's not, no, I'm talking about, when I say little out routes, I shouldn't say that. It's not true. What we call corner routes that you break off. So it's a squared out corner, 15 to 20 yards. So Edelman had the two 25-yard pickups. One of them was 101 versus Talib. Talib's playing him inside leverage, and he gives them the, you know, the 15-yard outbreaking route. And then the next one is, what's his name, Roby Coleman. It's got him in a zone situation. But, yeah, the New England Patriots, if they got Kyler Murray, I guarantee you, they would be airing it out, and it'd be stars and stripes. It would be, you know, it'd be crazy.
Are you coming on board with Kyler Murray,
it'd
finally?
Be crazy. No.
This is going to be fun leading up to the draft.
I will convince
you one day that Kyler Murray is the man for the Denver Broncos. I'm all in. I don't care if you got to move
man,
up. I don't care what you got to do.
I got to hear him in a couple more interviews.
He doesn't come off well to me in interviews. That's the one knock I have on him. I mean, but he's talking to national guys. And they're trying to get, I mean, like during Super Bowl week, they were trying to get an answer out of him, football or baseball, and he was really standoffish.
Well, that's not bad. If he's strong in his opinion.
He's kind of like a Jay Cutler. You're not going to get a lot out of that guy.
Oh, no, I don't like that.
I mean, he doesn't have that Jay Cutler,
I don't give a damn
attitude.
Nobody liked it.
You see his reality series, very Cavallari?
That is
must-watch television.
He's like, he's in the top 10, I believe. Quarterback earners.
That doesn't surprise me. He's had some big contracts.
I was shocked I saw that.
That doesn't surprise me. He's had some nice contracts. Matt Moore, NBA writer, Action Network. We'll talk some Nuggets and NBA next. It's Morning Drive, Walter Jackson, My Life Sports Radio. So pretty when I sleep. The temperature is 85. Try to close my eyes, but something's on my mind. Thinking about through all the years, counting all the beers. Oh man, it's been a ride.
The Morning Drive, Walsh to Jackson, presented by Tonti's Pizza.
Nuggets taking care of a tired Miami Heat team last night, 103-86 at Pepsi Center. One more game prior to the All-Star break. That'll be tomorrow night against the Sacramento Kings. Matt Moore joins us, as he does every Tuesday, NBA writer, Action Network. You can find him on Twitter at HP Basketball. Matt, good to talk to you as always. Thanks for coming on. Your impression of Denver last night was?
Great third quarter to take care of business. Very much. This team is like a lot of teams in the league. It's that last week before you're on vacation, whether it's Christmas vacation or spring break or summer vacation, and you're just trying to get out of the office. You don't really care that much about the work. You're not really paying that much attention. You push a lot of stuff until after. You're just trying to get to the break. So for them to take care of business versus a team that they should beat, it looked kind of sketchy in the first half. Their energy was low. I thought Mason Plumlee was excellent in that third quarter and giving them that energy. And for them to go on that run and just absolutely just smack a tired Heat team, like you said, and take care of business, that's a good sign for them maybe realizing that if the season's not over, you're not taken care of yet. You're going to have to keep pushing until the end of the year.
As I'm watching the Nuggets, we were talking about how tired they looked, and Malik Beasley actually seemed to get his legs back. I'm not sure how long or how quickly you can recover during an NBA season, but then you just mentioned how, you know, kind of sluggish they looked in the first half. Is the All-Star break enough time for the Nuggets to get healthy and get their legs back underneath them to make this run?
Not completely. It's still tough, and part of it is what you need a sense of urgency. like, guys are just, everyone's tired. Everyone's tired from now until the end of the playoffs. So that's just how it goes. And what happens is the sense of urgency is what pushes teams along. And some teams find that right after the All-Star break because they're desperate. You know, those teams like Utah and Sacramento and the Lakers are probably going to come out of the All-Star break firing because they know, like, we don't have any room for error. The Nuggets, on the other hand, have a lot of room for error. They can screw around, go under 500, and still win 50 games. Like, that's where they're at. So they're in an entirely different spot. I think it's when can they find, you know, that sense of urgency to be like, we want it, you know, they need a goal. We want to be a top four seed. We want home court. We want to be a top two seed. We want to stay out of the Warriors' way. Like, whatever it is that gets them motivated, that's what they've got to find. They'll talk about, like, we just need to get back to playing our way, et cetera. But you do need an external form of pressure to keep yourself sharp because these games, I think, in late February and early March are the toughest part of the season. Once you get to March 15th, teams start to realize, like, the playoffs are a month away. We got to go. But I think until then, that's like the hardest part to stretch of the season.
Shouldn't they be playing with urgency the rest of the way, even though they are in a comfortable position, given the fact they haven't made the playoffs since 2012, 2013?
Yeah, and they know that, and they've talked about that all year. That's what got them off to their great start. It's just, this is the problem with the NBA schedule. This is what I kept thinking last night, which is that, you know, Denver is a really good team, a great team that has played well all season. It's just almost impossible to play at your top level of urgency for 6 months. It's just a really long time to try and keep that energy level going. You know, the game number being 82 is one thing. It's another thing when it's just this long a span of time when you're playing every single week and getting that energy. And, you know, we look at it, we're like, you're getting paid millions of dollars. You've got this great opportunity. Why can't you stay motivated? And it's the same as anybody. Even if you're in a comfortable job, you do it long enough, your urgency is going to tail a little bit, and keeping that up, they'll rediscover it, I think. I think maybe last night was the start of that, but I do think it's a challenge.
Any chance we see IT tomorrow night?
I don't think so. There's not a lot of value in him coming back for a one-off before the All-Star break. It makes more sense for him to come back and say, all right, he's been cleared. We're going to have him talk to the media. You know, we'll ramp up practices that week after All-Star. And go with it from there. That makes the most sense, I think, from the perspective. It looks like he is going to play. You know, I was concerned because Monte Morris has played so well.
Yeah.
And talking to people in the front office, there isn't a lot of concern about the minutes crunch. They say, we need healthy bodies. We just need guys that can play. They don't expect Monte Morris's role to be diminished. They do think that having Isaiah Thomas back is nothing but a boon and something that can help them. So we'll see how it plays out and how Thomas looks, but I think it's going to be more of a challenge than folks realize about how to get him in the right positions with where his health is at, where his game is at, how long he's been away for a team that needs to maintain rhythm for the rest of the season.
Matt Moore joining us, NBA writer, Action Network. Find him on Twitter at HP Basketball. I don't think, us included, our show included, I don't think the Denver media is giving Monte Morris his credit. I mean, he's arguably been the best backup point guard in the league this year.
Yeah, and it started real slow. It's funny because when we started the year, I turned to Harrison Wayne, a colleague, and said, he's going to have to make that little mid-range jumper if he's going to stay in this rotation. He's going to have to find a shot. Yeah, no, he's like one of the most efficient backup backup guards in the league. And not only that, I mean, look, last year, it really is a simple Denver's record. I don't have it offhand, but Denver's record when they have fewer turnovers than the opponent is just incredible. Like, they just, if they're at home and they don't turn the ball over, that's it. They win. That's just the formula. Doesn't matter who it is. They win. And Morris has one of the best assist to turnover ratios in the league. He's been phenomenal at just taking care of the ball. He calms everything down. He makes huge buckets. I mean, I just keep thinking this, which is, I start going down the list of how many teams he would start on right now. And the list is a lot longer than I think people realize.
Jamal Murray is interesting. You know, this is his second year that I'm watching him, and I'm watching him mature. I'm watching him step into a role of leadership, and I have to give him credit. He and Nikola basically carried the team during a time that Millsap and Harris and they're trying to figure out whoever that Barton is out. But he's so sporadic. Is there any way? Is there anything? Is it just maturity? Is it just you just have to wait and see, or is that just who he is?
I think, yeah, wait and see. I think that's the next step for him. I think in the beginning it was, you know, getting caught up to game speed. That was his rookie season. I think the second year was about the struggles of learning to play point guard. He's still, I think, learning those. You saw last night the difficulty on the first few possessions, just getting Nikola Jokic.
Four turnovers. I mean, what you're talking about is that's...
Yeah. He still struggles with stuff like that. I think maybe the bigger thing for Murray is that there's just not a lot of evidence he's a point. There's just not. There's just not a lot of evidence he's a point guard. And he wants the ball in his hands, and he models himself after Steph Curry. And you can do that in the NBA. But with his skill set, not only his skill set, but with his limitation set, with the things that he's not good at, he would be better off ball, running as a scorer that, you know, gets the ball and works a lot with the ball, like C.J. McCollum, that I think he would as a pure point. The lineups with him and Morris are usually exceptional, and that's for a reason. He's got a point guard to set him up, to space the floor, to help him. And so, you know, I think that's going to be the bigger question going on. I think he'll find his consistency. Some guys, it takes that first year after their extension for them to find it. I think he'll find that consistency in scoring, but for his overall game, I do wonder if he'd be better served playing as shooting guard.
Is there a chance once Denver's completely healthy that Malone switches up the starting lineup and plays Jamal at the two? I don't even know if Gary can play the three. I mean, what's your opinion on that?
Can't play the three. He's too short. Just too short. You'll just get destroyed. Can't do that. So that's the problem. Is they've got an incredible core of undersized guards, and that's, you know, that causes, I think, a lot of problems for the lineups crunch. We're at the point now where we got to start worrying about when Gary Harris is going to get healthy, if Gary Harris is going to get healthy. He's just been beset constantly this year. There's a reason for concern with how many core related injuries they suffered. It seems to be an epidemic on the team. That's a concern, I think. But, you know, I think the starting lineup is going to be fluid just based off of, I don't know who's going to be healthy on a night-to-night basis. I do know that in any sort of key situation, be it regular season or playoffs, there needs to be healthy long stretches of Morris and Murray together.
The Nuggets didn't make a move at the deadline. Is there a three or four? Because I really believe they need someone to back up Millsap. Millsap came back pretty well from his, three games off or a little stint that he had there with the sore ankle. But I was looking online at Zach Randolph, Old Cat, Markieff Morris, maybe Marcin Gortat, actually being picked up and providing that role. I don't like Trey Lyles' defense, and his offense has been fairly anemic, so he's starting to really devaluate himself.
I think a couple things. One, Morris is probably going to go to either the Lakers or the Celtics or the Rockets. Like, that's just the word on the street, is he's going to one of those guys. Mm. And there's not really another four out there. I think it's more likely that Denver would bring in, much like Torrey Craig, somebody that folks haven't heard of, a G League or a two-way player, an unsigned draft pick, somebody that, you know, the scouting community knows. That seems more likely to me than a veteran pickup, just because there aren't a lot of great options. There's nobody that you look at and say, that makes a lot of sense. Now, that could change if a buyout happens. If one of the 300 guys that got traded on deadline day is unhappy with their role and it doesn't make a lot of sense, that may shift. But I agree with you, they need another four. I just don't know if there's going to be a lot of options for them at that spot. That may just be one that they're going to have to make do.
Matt, I believe there's like 26 games left in the season. The gap between Denver and OKC, it's only a game as well as Denver has played. How do you see the Northwest playing out? Do you think Denver can hold them off the rest of the way?
I think they can. OKC's schedule gets progressively harder. Denver's on the surface looks really difficult, but they got a lot of games versus teams that have kind of faded a little bit in the West. It's going to be tight, and not just with those two, Utah, Houston, Portland. All those teams are going to remain at the top of the pack. I do think that a lot of it's going to come down to, can Denver take care of the games that it should on the road? They've got to get better on the road. And, you know, they're better on the road this year than they were last year. They've got to be even better. And they can get a few signature wins, but part of it is there's not as much left in the regular season as we think. Everyone kind of thinks the All-Star break is some sort of halfway point. We got 26 games left. That's it.
Yeah.
Like there, we are. It is crunch time. And so if you get through the next 10 games and you rattle off at the rate that you have been, I think the pressure comes off a little bit. Some of this will separate out. One thing to keep in mind is Denver does have a 2-0 advantage in season series versus OKC. What if they split the final two? Denver wins tiebreaker. That one's going to be big. And if they win tiebreaker, that also likely means that they're going to win the division. And division is top tiebreaker in any series in which they split. So there's all these like permutations. Mm. I bring up tiebreakers with 26 games out because I think that's how close it might wind up being. We're going to have a lot of teams clumped after the Warriors and then at the top of the West and then towards that back end of the 6, 7, 8 spots. There's going to be some clumping there too. It's going to be, I think, a really tight race for the rest of the way.
Last one before we let you go. What's more impressive, what Russell Westbrook's doing with triple-doubles or what James Harden is doing going over 30 every night?
How about what Paul George is doing? How about being the best two-way player in the league? Harden's number one in deflections. He's got a great defensive rate in the post. But overall, if you go back and watch, a lot of the reason that the Rockets' defense is so much worse when he's on the floor is him. Westbrook, I think, is having a really great season. I think he's genuinely having a great season. He just can't shoot. But Paul George is having a really great season, and he can shoot. So to me, if you talk about what's most impressive, it's those guys, it's what Giannis is doing, in that Giannis doesn't have to put up crazy stat lines because the Bucks are so dominant and up by 20 in every game. That kind of stuff, I think, is most impressive. Between the two of them, I will say that, you know, look, the numbers for a triple-double are arbitrary, and they're a little bit warped with where pace and defense is at in the NBA this year. I totally admit that. But the consistency with which Westbrook does it and the way that he attacks so relentlessly every night out, and you talk to coaches about what impresses them, to me, there's a lot to be impressed by what Russell Westbrook's doing. And in a season where also I would note he's taken more of a backseat to Paul George. That guy does want to win. He hasn't ball hogged. He's opening up this opportunity for Paul George to win MVP. Russell Westbrook's had a hand in that.
What are you working on, Matt?
Oh, I've been working on some stuff on OKC when out there. I'm working on a piece on their defense. I've got stuff coming out on Sacramento and where they're at in advance for that Nuggets-Kings game and looking at exactly what's going on with the Boston Celtics.
Matt, what's Stanley Kirk Burrell doing at an OKC game?
I have no idea. I didn't even hear about that. That's wild.
MC Hammer.
That's wild.
I didn't know that.
I do. I'm looking at Sean's face. It's like,
what?
When the hell is Stanley Kirk Burrell?
Hey, Matt, we appreciate it, man. Have a good rest of your day.
Anytime, guys. Thanks.
I'm Matt Moore, NBA writer, Action Network on Twitter at HP Basketball. We'll wrap things up next.
What?
This is not true because.
There you go.
This is not a verified Twitter account. I read something that Texans releasing wide receiver Demaryius Thomas, but it's not with an account that doesn't have a check mark.
Fake news.
According to NFLTradeRumors.com. All right. Yeah, we'll check in with Mike from Mike Stadium Sports Cards and put a bow on this Tuesday. Salty Tuesday. Morning Drive, Walsh to Jackson.
You can't touch this. Yeah, that's how we living and you know. You can't touch.
The Morning Drive, Walsh to Jackson on Mile High Sports.
I just turned from a salty Tuesday to a Maple Leaf Tuesday.
What's up, cat?
I don't know why I said dog, man. That was stupid.
You can say dog or cat.
That was dumb. Why did I say that?
That's my dog.
Kind of came out.
You never said that?
Yeah, I've said it, but not on the air ever. When I'm talking to a guest, a partner of the show.
Have you ever said, what's up, cat daddy?
No,
that's what Rick Upchurch always says that.
Cat daddy? No.
Cat daddy.
No.
What's up, cat?
No.
You're a cool cat.
Be a cool cat tomorrow morning when the Maple Leafs whoop the ass.
I think I'm you know
top
what?
7-7, all about the Leafs.
I'm gonna go with a steel cut oatmeal bet.
Okay.
On the Avs.
Do you want the puck line? I'm offering it. I'm open for business.
I need two scores.
Okay. If the Maple Leafs win by two or more, I win.
Right.
If that doesn't happen, you win. Kyle Berry, you don't want none of this.
No, Kyle's rolling on a streak right now. He's Kyle. He doesn't.
I'm trying to figure out if I'm a go tonight. Like the tickets I want, they're like $43. That's a lot to spend on a hockey game. I can't. I could get credentialed, but I can't sit up top at the Pepsi Center because I'll pass out. So I'm afraid of heights. That's true, man. Last time I was up there, ask TJ McBride, man. I was like dizzy.
Really?
Yeah.
I no, it's psychological. I can help you with that.
I would like that. I hate heights. That's the one thing in life I'm really scared of.
Oh, dude, I can help you with that. That's no problem.
Okay.
Get your tickets, man. Get credentialed, I should say.
No, I'm scared, man. I don't want to watch from the top.
I'm helping with it.
I can't do it, man. I look over that thing, and it's like I get dizzy and I get lightheaded, and I'm telling you, I'll pass out up there.
So why do you think you get dizzy?
Because I'm scared of heights.
Why are you scared of heights?
Because that's the way God made me.
No. God didn't make you scared of heights.
Like, I hate flying on planes.
Loud noises. What are the two things that everybody's made with? Two fears.
I've got one fear. It's heights.
It's loud noises. Babies have fear of, man, I can't remember what the other one was.
Rodents?
Marriage?
Insects?
Marriage?
Man, I wish we had another hour to do this.
No, infants have two fears that are innate, that are born in all of us. Somebody, one of our listeners can definitely text that in, I'm sure.
We don't got time. We got to go.
Yeah, they could do it.
We got to go.
Quick fingers.
Got to go. Thanks to Ken Bell, former Broncos running back, for joining the program. Thanks to Matt Moore, NBA writer, Action Network. Thanks to you, Kyle Berry.
Thank you.
Go, Leafs, go.
Fear of falling and the fear of loud noises.
Is that the two fears infants have?
Yeah.
Okay. Good to know.
You're still struggling with the falling one.
I think I am.
So maybe God.
Dude, if that collapsed.
Maybe God did.
It's too high. It's too high.
Dude, if that collapsed.
It's too high. All right. Everyone have a great day. Love you, Pops. Talk to you tomorrow on My Life Sports Radio. Hey!